Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest is my friend Steve Greenfield. And Steve is going to talk about Joe Biden and the race for the 2020 race for president. As of right now, Steve, how do you think the race is shaping up? It seems like no matter where you look, they always put Joe Biden as the front runner, and he has not been a friend to people who have student loan debt. So can you share your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You use that phrase, he hasn't been a friend to people. Joe Biden hasn't been a friend to anybody, okay? Joe Biden still brags about being the architect of mass black incarceration with the crime bill in the 90s. You know, he voted for all of our wars. He voted for the Patriot Act. You know, I'm not sure exactly besides the banking industry, which, of course, has a significant home in his home state of Delaware, because they basically have no corporate taxes in Delaware. I'm not sure who he's been a friend to at all in the course of his political career other than the banking industry. So, of course, he's not a friend to people who have student loans because he's from a tiny, tiny little state that has hardly any population in it whatsoever, but probably has the highest percentage of incorporated banks per capita of any state in the country. So, you know, that's how his campaigns, you know, get donations. That's how he's been legislating since the day he arrived, you know, in public life. That's who the guy is. He's the sum total of you know, everything that's wrong with the way our, you know, our privately financed election system and our lobbying systems and the way that that turns into enacted legislation in this country. He is the embodiment of all that. But, of course, that's why he was brought into this race. I mean, look, you're talking about a guy who ran for president twice before, was able to get a whopping, you know, 1% or so support during those races, which were also plagued by his constant, you know, horrible statements and plagiarism and other things that were, you know, unacceptable to the voting population. And here he is now brought into it one more time as he's approaching 80 years old and is clearly a very diminished capacity. I'm not doing the age thing, right? Everyone ages differently. You know, Bernie is the same age and obviously not of diminished capacity, right? So it's the capacity that we're looking at, not the number on the calendar. But, you know, it was announced in the early stages that he was being brought into this not because of any, you know, substantial call by the public for him to enter, but simply because it was believed he would be appealing to blue-collar white males who voted for Trump. You know, so we have to first understand why Biden is in this race in the first place. He's in this race because of his history of close ties and massive financial reward return on investment in his campaigns by the banking industry. And so that's who he is. That's why he's here. That's why the media is constantly reporting on him to make sure that, you know, people who want to jump on the bandwagon will be saying, oh, well, if he's the front runner, or if he's the front runner, he's the most likely to be able to beat Trump, and that's all we care about. Even this entire impeachment fiasco with all of the significant crimes that Trump could have been charged with, you know, from the Emoluments Clause violations to the children at the border to so many things, you know, that he could have been charged with, that the only thing he's being charged with is something that the Democrats want us to believe was being done to Joe Biden, because Trump himself holds the belief that the greatest threat to him remaining president is a Joe Biden candidacy. And so, you know, we are just being overrun by Biden, by every institution of wealth and power in this country. It's a very, very challenging landscape to challenge that kind of messaging because, you know, in another version of the name of your show, All Exits Closed, one of the exits that's closed is to disseminate public information on a scale that can be competitive with the disinformation that's being disseminated by our corporate structure that has limitless disposable income, you know, because they've absorbed the entire tripling of the GDP over the last 40 years, while the rest of us have only barely kept pace with inflation. And so they now have three times as much disposable income as they had 40 years ago when they already had the majority of the disposable income. And so that's an important exit that's closed as well, which is, you know, we're doing the best we can here with your podcasts and some small low wattage radio stations that are giving access to it. And that's to be commended, right? Because we all need to do everything we can do. And so the first thing you need to do is identify what you can do versus what you can't do, and then put your resources into the things that you can do. So what you're doing, what I'm trying to help you doing, this is, of course, to be commended. But Biden has to be viewed in this entire big picture, of a $20 trillion annual gross domestic product, you know, a military budget that makes up more than 75% of the discretionary portion of the federal budget and more than 50% of the entire federal budget, approaching about $1.4 trillion a year for 2019-2020. And so that's what we're looking at when we look at Joe Biden. Now, to get back to what is his role in the student debt crisis, that's very concrete. And you know, you don't have to go rifling through file cabinets to go find that or, you know, read between the lines of things. You know, Joe Biden made an amendment to a bankruptcy law that was being adopted in 2005 while George Bush was president and both houses of Congress were under Republican control. And Joe Biden inserted into that bill an amendment specifically exempting student loans from being dischargeable at bankruptcy. Now, the whole purpose of bankruptcy, whether it's corporate bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy, you know, is that you're going to volunteer to take a permanent hit to your credit rating and your ability to get credit in the future, take out loans in the future, in exchange for getting you know, a lifeline for survival about loans that you do not have the financial ability to pay off right now, right? And in exchange for that, the way bankruptcy works is that maybe some of your assets have to be sold off to give your creditors at least something. The way that you conduct your finances, or if it's a business, your business would, you know, be restructured in order to make sure that you don't get into this kind of financial trouble in the future. You know, and then, you know, yes, at some point there's actual relief, right? Some of the, what you owe is just not going to be collected by the people who lent you money. Well, Joe Biden, inserted an amendment into this exempting student loans from having this available, that, you know, even if you're bankrupt and your credit is permanently ruined, no matter what, you're still paying back your student loan, and you're paying it back for the rest of your life, and that's going to be a financial obligation, even if you're living on a park bench. I mean, there's no soft pedaling the implications of this, right? And there's no soft pedaling the simple fact that it was Joe Biden and only Joe Biden that you know brought this in to the last minute as this bill was being adopted. As bad as a bill and you know, anti-worker, anti-middle-class, pro-corporate bill that it already was, it is Joe Biden who is specifically responsible for it. A lot of Democrats in the Senate, 25 of them were very much against what Biden was doing, but another 18 supported it. you know, this constant division in the Democratic Party when it's under this kind of corporate control. But in answer to your question, finally getting around to the specific answer, this is literally a case where there is just one person specifically responsible for why this happened, and it's Joe Biden from Delaware, the banking state, the state that has no corporate taxes on the banking industry, which is why they're incorporated there. And, you know, so he's like the Chuck Schumer of Delaware. He's the Senator Wall Street of the Wall Street of the state that doesn't tax corporate incorporation and the banking industry in particular. That is who he is. That's what his career has been about. That, of course, was 2005. It's about to be, you know, that was 14 years ago. And over the course of that period of time, the student debt load in this country has increased by $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. That's the narrative, right? That's the history of it. That's how we got to where we are today. The student loan debt load in this country has increased $1 trillion since Joe Biden had that amendment put on the bankruptcy bill.
Our friend Zach Garofalo, when the first time I met him, I was mentioning about the student loan debt crisis. And as you know, and as we've spoken on the air, he has student debt. He's a young man. He has student debt. And he did not realize that Joe Biden was the architect of this debacle. So my question to you is, with 44 million Americans, or maybe more at this point, strapped with student debt and with the ability to look at stuff on the internet and read and have information where people can make a good assessment about the society and where they are, how come more people don't know about Joe Biden and his methods that he used in the Senate?
Because the message that we've been receiving going back to even, you know, the summer of 2016 after the Republican convention, the message that the Democratic Party has been sending out is nothing matters except defeating Trump. Okay, whether or not this debt problem is going to be solved doesn't matter, right? Whether the mass incarceration problem is going to be solved doesn't matter. Whether we're ever going to end the Patriot Act doesn't matter. Whether we're going to ever solve the mass incarceration problem, you know, doesn't matter. Whether we're going to stop going to war against countries that are not threatening us and spending another $8 trillion and killing another – doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, Cynthia. See, none of that stuff matters. We're told over and over to be single-issue thinkers, and not even about an issue, but about a person. It's only about a person. No one's even talking about issues right now. Hillary Clinton wasn't talking about issues, and that's why she lost. She was like, what are you going to do? If you don't vote for me, Donald Trump's going to become president. And you know what? Apparently that didn't excite quite enough people in quite enough states in the Electoral College system, you know, to prevent Donald Trump from winning. And here we are getting ready to do that all over again. You know, we want to just, oh, stop forcing me to talk about issues. Can't you see I'm not Trump? You know, like, yeah, I can see that. You know, we can all see that. But that is the message. And of course, the other message that the mainstream media is providing to the liberal population is Russia. Russia, 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 Russia. They gave us Russia. Just wait, that Mueller report's coming out. We got all this great stuff about Russia. Russia's taking over America. And then the report came out, and it turned out that Russia wasn't taking over America. The Trump campaign had never specifically and deliberately coordinated for any specific act of campaign assistance to create this so-called Manchurian candidate that's running America on behalf of letting Russia take over the world. And so instead, you know, of just moving on to a messaging system that would excite people about voting for the Democratic Party, they decided to drag up this Ukraine issue. Because why? Because if we didn't give Ukraine these weapons, that would help Russia. It's still about Russia. They're saying Ukraine. But if you read the articles of impeachment, they specifically say that the holding up of the aid to Ukraine was providing leverage to an adversary, creating a national security. Well, that's to Russia, right? We were arming Ukraine supposedly to help them resist Russia. So that's what we've got. We've got Trump and we've got Russia. And even if you turn on MSNBC, which is supposed to be like the progressive part of the liberal media, all you hear about is, you know, Trump and Russia, Trump and Russia. Nobody's talking about the 44 million people that are under debt. And by the way, that number is remarkably similar to another portion of our population that nobody's talking about either, which is the poor, the people that can't even take on student debt, the people that are never achieving social mobility because they're never going to college because college is too expensive, with or without taking out loans, period, too expensive. And the impoverished, the below the federal poverty line, which, by the way, is only $12,400 a year, okay? We have 41 million people in this country that are, you know, too poor for this to even be a question that comes up in their lives. You throw those 44 million people with student debt on top of the 41 million people that are living below $12,400 a year in this country, and now you got yourself up to 85 million people that nobody wants to talk about in the Democratic Party. Nobody wants to talk about in the Democratic Party supporting wing of our mainstream media. You know, this is something that we have to find within ourselves, you know, to recognize what's not being talked about and, you know, find a way to be more outraged about that and express that outrage, to tell Rachel Maddow, we're not watching your show, and so your advertisers are going to want you taken off the air because you're not providing ratings anymore. You know, that's what we need to start doing. We can't really, you know, we're just mortal human beings, you know. If everything we're hearing everywhere we go 24 hours a day is Russia, 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 Trump, 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 Russia, we have to stop Russia, we have to stop Trump. When is there time to say we have to stop the student debt crisis? When is there a time that we have to say we have to stop non-defensive wars? You know, when is the time to say we have to do something about the border crisis, you know, and about immigration? We sort of know, we hear the words, we hear those words periodically, but we don't have any time or any consciousness to invest into thinking about what we should be doing about those things, because we're barraged with this massive sensory overload all the time about Russia, 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 Trump, 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 you know, and it's just horrible. You know, I believe that, you know, what I'm doing in the pair of civil disobedience movements that I've gotten involved with on, man, look at this. I'm mentioning non-defensive war. I'm mentioning mass incarceration. I'm mentioning the student debt crisis. I haven't even mentioned global warming. You know, I know I'm not letting you get a word in edgewise here so far, but look, right, the great existential crisis of the entire planet, of the entire planet's population right now. We're aware of it, right? We keep saying global warming, global warming. It's a crisis. But who's, you know, nobody's doing anything about it because there's no room to get that in between Trump, 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 Russia, Russia, Russia. And the messed up thing, the most horrifying thing about that is that the specific people that are keeping us overwhelmed with sensory overload about Trump, 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 and Russia, Russia, Russia are the Democrats. Not the Republicans. The Republicans don't seem to be particularly concerned about Russia. You know, this is coming to us, this inability to have time or space in our brains to contemplate these myriad and significant and potentially devastating issues that need policy solutions in the most urgent and timely way imaginable. We don't have time because, you know, we turn on our televisions or turn on our internet, and all the Democrats are giving us 24 hours a day is Russia, 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 Trump, Trump, Trump. You know, oh, yeah, we'll get to that. Look, first we have to solve Trump and Russia. Then we can get to that other stuff some other time. No, We can't. We're not actually under any threat from Russia right now. We are under amazing threat from global warming. We are under, just ask any Californian, ask any Australian. We are under amazing threat right now from mass incarceration. Ask any black family, right? We are under amazing threat from student loan debt. Ask any of those 44 million people with the $1.5 trillion worth of debt that our legal system doesn't even allow them to be relieved of should they go bankrupt. You know, no, don't ask these people. We'll kick all these cans down the road. You're personally selfish if you insist on talking about them. You lose your friends. You know, that's part of it, too. It's not just the media, you know, because of the effect of this conversation. If you want to talk about the actual issues, they'll call you a purity tester and say that you're just trying to help the Republicans. You know, you don't want to help defeat Trump. You don't want to help stop Russia. You're a purity tester. You're privileged. You're selfish. You lose your friends. You know, I can't begin to tell you how many friends I've lost, because I want to talk about global warming, because I want to talk about how my congressman is not just ignoring it, but actively supporting the fossil fuel industry and helping the use of fossil fuels grow at the time when we need to be doing everything we can, to scale back the use of fossil fuels and ultimately completely eliminate them. I've lost dozens of friends over wanting to do that, you know, over wanting to talk about that. So, you know, there's the social pressure, too. There's, you know, it's just that we're in a really bad time here, Cynthia. We're in a really bad time. We are in, as far as I can tell, the worst time that this country has experienced socially, economically, politically, in every way since 1968. I am fully expecting 2020 to be very close to a replay of 1968. There is going to be street action. There is going to be law enforcement response to that. There is going to be violence by the gun-toting portion of the Trump-supporting population. There is going to be a pair of political conventions that will rival what we saw in Chicago back in 1968. I have a very, very dim and frightening view of the year that's going to start. It is the most consequential, election year since 1968. Large portions of the population for the first time since the 1960s have risen up and dedicated themselves to civil disobedience. That's only going to grow. As the year wears on, it's going to be viewed as a threat to our electoral institutions by those institutions and the law enforcement systems that are under their command. This is going to be – we're in a really terrible time. I want to be very blunt about this to your listeners. 2020 is going to be the most difficult time in our nation's history since 1968, and we all need to be – preparing ourselves psychologically, you know, to be involved with that, not just to bear witness to it, right? Because we can't be passive. We cannot be passive at this moment. Being passive at times of great crisis means being out of the way of the side that has the advantage due to their power advantage. If you're not resisting, you're an ally of power. So this is, you know, we should all sort of acknowledge over the next few days as this year is beginning that we're entering this period of great crisis and that we have to maintain our resolve through this time, because this is about so much more than Joe Biden and the bankruptcy bill that he amended to block holders of student loans from being able to discharge their obligations to those payments even when they go bankrupt. Although, you know, that the Democrats did that and support that, and the consequences that it has is very much a good summary example of the entire problem with the Democratic Party and how the great issues that we are facing can never be solved as long as we constantly default to lesser evil. That's a nowhere road, because in one way or another, the Republicans are always going to be more evil. Even if they you know, decided to get on board with global warming, they'd still be perceived as, you know, too much fundamental Christian and anti-abortion and anti-gay. There's always going to be two or three things people can find to show that the Republicans are still somewhat more evil. And as long as we allow that distinction to be our guide, then, you know, we're going to allow our corporations to continue operating all the other evils in our society, and coming into conflict with each other over, like, oh, you're too privileged to worry about what happens to gay people. You're too privileged to worry about what's going to happen to women. That we're turning our firing squad against ourselves instead of us saying the exact same thing that the corporatists are saying, which is, you know what, if we survive what we're facing right now, we can get back to that stuff. You know, we're actually in an existential crisis right now. We're in a physical, right, environmental existential crisis. The crisis in democracy is showing that we're in a significant political existential crisis, that our income distribution is still giving $3 to ownership for every $1 it gives to workers, shows that we're in economic crisis. And, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, you have to go to the, you know, I use a firefighting analogy, right? We say this all the time, which is that you're going to go to the main seat of the fire before you go put out the spot fires. You have to save the structure. Then you go put out the spot fires, right? Then you go around the house and find the hot spots and you put them out. But if you don't save the house because you're looking for little hot spots, then, you know, then what did you do, right? You basically assisted the destruction of the house. Well, we need to get our priorities straight.
Steve, this has been very enlightening, and I look forward to a year of conversations with you, and hopefully through our little podcasting and radio shows, I hope we can make a difference in 2020. So you have been listening to Steve Greenfield, and if you like All Exits Closed, please follow us on Twitter. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Happy New Year.